There is no dignity in death. The doctors started with her upper jawbones, which were removed in several pieces. They had no need to do the same with her lower jaw, for it was no longer present, having been lifted out in life. They sawed through her spine, her head, her ribs. They scraped her bones with a knife to prepare them for the next steps. And there was, somehow, a kind of ritualistic care in their steady tasks as they washed her bones in hot water, dried, and then reduced them to greyest white ash. Some bones they put to the X-ray film test, others they ignited to ash, and then tested the ash itself for radioactivity. When they checked the X-ray film, days later, there was Molly's message from beyond the grave. She had been trying to speak for so long. Now, at last, there was someone listening. Her bones had made white pictures on the ebony film. Her vertebrae glowed in vertical white lights, like a regiment of matches slowly burning into black. They looked like rows of shining dial painters walking home from work. The pictures of her skull, meanwhile, with her jawbone missing, made her mouth stretch unnaturally wide, as though she was screaming for justice through all these years. There was a smudge of dark where her eye had once been, as though she was looking out, staring accusingly, setting straight a lie that had blackened her name. There was, the examining doctors said, no evidence of disease, in particular, no evidence of syphilis. Innocent. Each and every portion of tissue and bone tested, the doctors concluded, gave evidence of radioactivity. It wasn't Cupid's disease, as the gossip mongers charged. It was radium. The doctor's autopsy findings gathered wide publicity. The girl's fight for justice was slowly becoming famous. And it was this publicity that now brought another girl to Berry's office, though she did not sign with him at that time. Ella Eckert, Molly Maggia's friend, the fun-loving girl with frizzy blonde hair who had laughed her head off at so many company picnics, now called on the Newark lawyer in the fall of 1927. She was in better health than any of the five women suing, but she nevertheless told Berry, "I have spent at least $200 for X-rays, blood tests, medicine and medical attention, all to no avail." She'd had a fall at work at Bamberger's the year before and had been forced to give up her job as her shoulder had never healed. Indeed, Berry could see that her arm was badly swollen, extending from the shoulder down to the hand. She said she was in severe pain and begged him to help her. And that help was not just for her. Ella Eckert had taken her fun-loving ways to what were then considered extremes. She'd had a son with a married man who had since disappeared, and now she was bringing up the boy on her own. She couldn't afford to be out of work or to get sick. Her son needed her. Berry knew their paths would cross again. In the meantime, his pace of work sped up. An important date was 14th of November 1927. This was when the first testimony was taken in the girl's trial as part of a deposition. Berry had issued his formal summons to Dr. Drinker. Now, the reluctant doctor gave his evidence under oath. It was at this juncture that Berry met his main adversary, Edward A. Markley, the attorney for the radium firm's insurance company, who was leading USRC's defence. Markley was almost 6 feet tall, with brown hair and eyes, which he framed with glasses. His father had been a judge, and he was the eldest son in his family. He had all the suave confidence and self-possession such attributes would give. He was some 6 years older than Berry, with all the added experience that implied.